A reading from Matthew 6, 1 through 6, from the Message. Be especially careful when you're trying to be good, so that you don't make a performance out of it. It might be good theater, but the God who made you won't be applauding. And when you come before God, don't turn that into a theatrical production either. All these people making a regular show out of their prayers, hoping for stardom. Do you think God sits in a box seat? Here's what I want you to do. Find a quiet, secluded place so you won't be tempted to role play before God. Just be there as simply and honestly as you can imagine. The focus will shift from you to God, and you will begin to sense God's grace.
The version that Pam read comes from The Message. And gosh, it seems pretty plain spoken, doesn't it? Don't be a show pony, as Brenda likes to call folks with big personalities. I have no idea who she's talking about. Don't be an actor. Matthew is writing his interpretation of Jesus' instructions to the disciples. Don't grandstand to draw attention to how good you are. Hear this same scripture in the New Revised Standard Version. Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from the Father in heaven. So whenever you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be praised by others. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your alms may be done in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And whenever you pray, don't be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners, so that they may be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But whenever you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. That's pretty plain spoken too. Don't be like the hypocrites. Where? Like the hypocrites in the synagogue or in the street. Now wait, old Matthew. Religious leaders were housed in the synagogues. And so now Matthew's getting personal with me, and Pam and Kenny with you, and also with you. Those in the church and those in the streets. I'm going to keep trying to find a version of this that's not so tough to hear. So let's try the New International Version. Here we go. Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from the Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues, ouch, again, and on the streets, in order to be honored. I tell you the truth, they've received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing, so that your giving may be in secret. And then God, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. And when you pray, don't be like the hypocrites. Because this version says also, they love to pray standing in synagogues and on street corners to be seen by everyone. I tell you, they've received their full reward. But when you pray, go to your room, close the door, and pray to your God who is unseen. And then your God who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Maybe a tad more diplomatic, but the same concept. And that is, well, the truth is there are many ways to interpret this scripture and this story to find meaning for our lives. But here's sort of what's speaking to me tonight. I know Matthew was writing to a predominantly Jewish audience and to a Jewish audience known to be in the upper economic class in the ancient community. That's one reason why when Matthew wrote the birth story of Jesus, Matthew had magi, no smelly, lowly shepherds, because that particular Jewish community would not pay one bit of attention to it. So knowing the angle Matthew was taking, we can discern that he's trying to call out anyone, religious leaders, the pious folks in society, anyone who has as their motivation self-interest and self-promotion. We got to be careful here because one might conclude Jesus is teaching us not to pray in public, not to join others downtown, feeding the homeless, not to grab a hammer and a nail and go to a Habitat house in view of folks, not to post on Facebook that for another month we just packed 1,050 meals for hungry elementary kids. And yet, read carefully and put in historical context, that's not what Jesus is teaching. Matthew uses three examples of godly living: devotion to God and acts of worship, acts of personal integrity and justice, and love towards fellow human beings. And in all three of these examples, the point of contrast between hypocrites versus what Jesus expected of his followers, it was not between public and private worship, because Matthew affirmed both of those. Nor is it the contrast between public and private behavior, because Matthew affirmed both of those. Rather, friends, this passage of Scripture is all about the contrast of motivations. In other words, what is our end goal when we're worshiping or giving to those who have less than we do, or praying and living in a godly way? Tonight, we begin our Lenten journey. And over the next several weeks leading up to Easter, we will give some attention to evaluating our lives and our priorities and our values. And in doing so, we will be invited to evaluate our reasons for holding those priorities and values. Are they God-driven or society-driven? Are they God-driven or self-driven? And if they are self-driven or society-driven, why? And so it begs the question, what will this season of Lent be all about? And will it even matter in the grand course of our lives? And the answer, to be just as frank as Matthew was when we read those scriptures in three different ways, the answer is, it's up to us. Each one of us will decide if we're going to give lip service or a passing nod to reconnecting with God, or if we're going to get real. It's up to us whether we'll see the sign of ashes tonight as a checkbox that we came to church, or if we embrace it fully as both a sign of our own mortality and a sign of God's everlasting presence with us. It's up to us. And it seems, at least to me, that it's time. It's time to get real. I got to be honest with you all. Marcia McPhee, who's a friend of mine, developed a series while she was in Florida with Brenda and I the week after Christmas. Cindy was also there. And I remember when I was coming in from the beach and she was at the pool, she said, "Hey, sit down here and take a look at this series and give me your thoughts." I just wanted to stay in the sun a little longer. Upon a quick review, I immediately got excited because some of her scripture selections are favorites. In fact, in a few weeks, we'll reflect on one of my all-time favorite from Ecclesiastes to everything there is a season. And just stay tuned because Psalm 23 is coming up. Who doesn't love Psalm 23? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. But daggone it, I overlooked her selection for Ash Wednesday. As it turns out, I wish I'd have paid closer attention to it. Because this scripture is hard for me. And I'm not proud that it's hard for me. And the difficulty stems from several angles. Let me just share two of them. Both related to two individuals that I cherish. I don't know if you all pay much attention to my Facebook post. I certainly look at yours a lot. Sometimes shaking my head. As I'm sure you probably do with me. But up until a couple years ago, I had this horrible habit of putting on Facebook basically everything I did. I would say at 1 in the morning, "Whoo! Another 18-hour day. Worked at the office, went to church, sold a house, came home, tired." I did this almost every day. And then my dear friend Peggy Oglehart, who I miss in many ways, but I miss because Peggy's that friend that has no agenda but holds the mirror up to you when you need it to be held in a loving, direct kind of way. So she called me. And I got to tell you, I was ticked at her for about 2 weeks. I said, "Hey, Peg, what's up?" Peg, never the one to mince around, said, "I need to talk to you about something." I said, "Okay, sis, what is it? Why you do that? What are you talking about? Why do you post everything you do on Facebook? Why do you tell everybody how many hours you work?" I said, "Peg, I don't know." She said, "I'm going to tell you, I do know. Please share." She said, "Marsh, you have a need for validation. You feel like you need to prove to the church that you're doing hard work there. And you feel like you need to prove to your family that you're in business with that you're doing hard work there. And you feel you need to prove to everybody who sees that what a hard, committed worker you are with little time for relaxation. And Marsh, that is not a good badge to wear. And I want you to stop doing it." Whew, I was peeved. But you know why I was? Because she was telling the truth. She was telling the truth. So I had a decision to make. Blow it off, tell her mind her own business, or take from someone I knew who cared about me and evaluate the deeper meaning of that. Now, I'm not going to go into all that, but I can tell you that some of it stemmed from the fact is growing up as a lesbian and being rejected a lot, that I always felt like I had to do more than other people to be as good as they were. There were lots of other things that opened up for me, but I can tell you, I don't do that anymore. I haven't since then. And at first I didn't do it just because I was like, "I'll show you." But once I understood why I was doing it, it was even more important for me to stop. To recognize I didn't have to measure up to anyone. Example number two comes from my wife, Brenda. Another one who can lovingly and directly hold the mirror up. I have always considered myself to be a generous person. I've always had a heart for those with less than. But the truth is, I sort of wanted a parade about it. Brenda and her sister and brother-in-law, for years, sponsored kids at schools, elementary schools that she taught at, but always anonymously. Always. And so, Brenda and I are together. She tells me the tradition. I'm all in. We're shopping, we're rapping, we're doing our thing. And I'm all excited because I just want to roll into Wellington Elementary with our load and say, look here, for the kids. And Brenda said, no, that's not how I roll. I don't want anyone to know. The only person that knows is our family resource person. To everybody else, it's just going to show up. The truth is, I had to evaluate that. What did it mean that for whatever reason I needed accolades or recognition for giving and for doing? This is a tough scripture for me. It can be tough to get real, can it? But at the end of the day, we have to decide if we're willing to get real. To be real with who we are. To be real with what our growing edges are, because we all have them. And a really big part of that, friends, is slowing down. Slowing down so we can listen. So we can be honest with ourselves. And discern what changes we need to make. What realignments in our priorities or values we need to adjust. And friends, we have to be willing to be gut honest with what voices we're going to allow to affect the trajectory of our lives. Are we going to stay in the rat race to be good enough or smart enough or successful enough or busy enough so that we could get a ranking by society or by individuals who want us to live up to what they think we should be doing? Or are we going to quiet those voices and those old record players in an intentional way, and make room and time to just be and see if maybe, just maybe, we can really reconnect with an unhurried God who's been waiting on us patiently to just be still? It's time, friends. Time to be real. Time to reconnect with one another. Time to reconnect with God. It's time. It's really past time. It should just be.
When I rise, in the morning, when I rise, in the morning, when I rise, give me Jesus, give me Jesus, give me Jesus. You can have all this world, but give me Jesus. And when I am alone, oh, and when I am alone, and when I am alone, give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. You can have all this world, but give me Jesus. And when I come to die, oh, and when I come to die, and when I come to die, give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. You can have all this world. You can have all this world. You can have all this world. But give me Jesus.
It's really funny how already this series has taken hold in my life. It is quite normal for me when I have a break during a worship service. What do you think I often do? Look at my watch. What time is it? Are we on schedule? And I sit in the chair to look at my watch, and it was gone. And in that moment, I thought, just let it be. Just let it be. If you've raised children or are raising children, or even if you haven't or aren't, you've heard of a timeout. Now, last night, Kenny and Daniel and Brenda and Pam and I were here setting things up, and I was talking about this, and I said, I got to tell you, my mama skipped through the timeout. I'll let y'all figure out what happened. But often, we give a timeout when a break's needed. Perhaps we need to think about the consequences of an action, or we just need to break the intensity. Perhaps we're spiraling emotionally and we need some perspective. And maybe we just need to get quiet so we can change the course of action. So in this series over the next several weeks, we're going to give ourselves a timeout. And we're going to send ourselves to the prayer chair. This will be a time of letting go of things that we don't need, that are weighing us down. Sometimes known as confession, assurance, and petition. These three ways of reconnecting with God are ancient, and they really make so much sense. So in confession, we let go of regret about the past, unburdening our hearts. And then we remember that there's the promise and assurance that God will never abandon us, no matter what, even sometimes when we've been the ones who've been distant. Confessions, letting go of the past. with petitions. We let go of the worry about things that we cannot control. Our worry about the future that we know not what it might bring. Giving it all to the loving God who holds us close and rocks us gently. My hope is that you will also designate a prayer chair at home and find time each day to give yourself a time out in the prayer chair, to let go and to remember God's presence and to ask God to hold dear those who you hold dear. And to help you and me get in this habit of sorts, to help us get into this intentional time with God each day, we have a couple of tools for you. First, we have a Lent devotional again this year, written by our denomination. And this year, the devotional is entitled, Take Nothing With You. I was telling Kenny and Pam last night, it's one of the best they've done. And so in this season of Lent, may we all accept this invitation to take a time out with God and to take nothing into that time out except for our thoughts and our prayers and our worries and our joys and our grief and our celebrations, our anxieties and our uncertainties. And perhaps most of all, we take to the prayer chair our silence. So let's just start with that tonight, huh? Some silence. And it's okay to not try to find words to fill the silence in your head. It's okay if you're like me and the thoughts won't quiet down. Find a stillness, perhaps calling your attention to your feet on the floor, your hands in your lap, your breath in and out. For in these moments, there's nothing expected of you. There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to be. This stillness, this being, is enough.
Scope for faith begun.